te vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Jnanam nikshraya sarthaya. Purushasyatma darshanam. Yad ahur varnayetat te. Vidaya granti bedanam. Jnanam nikshraya sarthaya. Purushasyatma darshanam. Yad ahur varnayetat te. Vidaya granti bedanam. Nikshayasa artaya. For the ultimate perfection. Purushasya. Of a man. Atmadarshanam. Self-realization. Yat. Which. Ahuhu. They said. Varnaye. I shall explain. Tat. That. Te. To you. Vidaya. In the heart. Granti. The knots. Bedanam. Cuts. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Knowledge is the ultimate perfection of self-realization. I shall explain that knowledge unto you, by which the knots of attachment to the material world are cut. Purport. It is said that by proper understanding of the pure self, or by self-realization, one can be freed from material attachment. Knowledge leads one to attain the ultimate perfection of life and to see oneself as he is. The Shvetashvatara Upanishad also confirms this, 3.8. Tameva viditvati mrityumeti. Simply by understanding one's spiritual position or by seeing oneself as he is, one can be freed from material entanglements. In various ways, the seeing of oneself is described in the Vedic literature. And it is confirmed in the Bhagavatam, Purushasya Atmadarshanam, that one has to see oneself and know what he is. As Kapila Deva explains to his mother, this seeing can be done by hearing from the proper authorities, a proper authoritative source. Kapila Deva is the greatest authority because he is the personality of Godhead. And if someone accepts whatever is explained as it is without interpretation, then he can see himself. Lord Chaitanya explained to Sanatana Goswami the real constitutional position of the individual. He said directly that each and every individual soul is eternally a servitor of Krishna. Jiver Swarup Hoy Krishner Nityodas. Every individual soul is eternally a servitor. When one is fixed in the understanding that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, and that his eternal position is to serve in association with the Supreme Lord, he becomes self-realized. This position of rightly understanding oneself cuts the knot of material attachment, vidya granti bhedanam. Due to false ego, or false identification of oneself with the body and the material world, one is entrapped by Maya. But as soon as one understands that he is qualitatively the same substance as the Supreme Lord, because he belongs to the same category of spirit soul, and that his perpetual position is to serve, one attains Atmadarshanam and Vidyakundibedanam, self-realization. When one can cut the knot of attachment to the material world, his understanding is called knowledge. Atmadarshanam means to see oneself by knowledge. Therefore, when one is freed from the false ego by the cultivation of real knowledge, he sees himself, and that is the ultimate necessity of human life. The soul is thus isolated from the entanglement of the 24 categories of material nature. Pursuit of the systematic philosophical process called Samkhya is called knowledge and self-revelation. Nice choice of words. Gyanam nikshaya sartaya purushasya atmadarshanam yad ahur varnaye tatte vidya granti bedanam. Very few Indians who didn't learn English as their first language can express themselves the way Prabhupada can in English. He's a poet. Vidyagranti Bedanam. This is cutting the knot. This is, yesterday you were talking about the Procrustean bed. There's also a similar story about the sword of Damocles. He was another treacherous host. He would feed his guests very sumptuously, but there was a sword dangling by a thin, thin thread right above the guest's head to remind them of the fleeting nature of our enjoyment. But that was Damocles' sword. But here we have, today we have the Gordian knot. I guess his name was Gordius. And they had, there was this, the prize was some princess or something. Who could untie this knot? And nobody could figure it out. It was such a messy knot. So Gordius just grabbed his sword and ripped it, cut it apart. So this is the Gordian solution of untying a knot. Is just cut it. I don't know if he was considered, whether that was considered legal or not, whether he got the princess, I don't know. He did? Okay. But here, the same idea is suggested, to just cut the knot. Don't bother unraveling it. This is the avaranatmaka shakti of Maya, that we feel complacent. It's bad enough that we're thrown into this world of misery, confusion, and ignorance. But we're made to like it by Maya's second potency. Akshepa Atmika Shakti puts us into this material condition, pushes us down into it. And the Avaranatmika Shakti makes us want to stay here. We don't even have to be forcibly confined. We're confined by our own desire. This is a very expert prison. There's no bars on the cells. There's no electric fence. There's no guards ready to shoot you. Anybody can walk right out the door, but nobody wants to. This is most excellently designed prison. Of course, there is force applied, but it's subtle. You don't see that there's force ready to be applied on you. Most people, therefore, under the influence of this covering potency, don't even want to be freed. They don't think that there's anything wrong. That they are, they think they are free already. What do you mean? I can go to the, what's the name of the place?
Kmart.
I can go to the Food Lion we have in North Carolina. ShopRite. Supermarket, and I can pick my among 30 different brands and flavors of coffee on the shelf. I can have pumpernickel bagels, chocolate bagels, salted bagels, any kind of bagel I want. So I'm free. I have so much choice. I can choose whatever I want. I can go on the internet and find anything I want. I'm free. And I'm satisfied with that. Most people are. In fact, Maya is so economical that she gives each person as little as she has to make them satisfied. She just entices everybody with the bare minimum that they will be enticed with. But there are a few people, well, there are people who are dissatisfied. Not to the extent that they want to get out of the material world altogether, but they want some change. This is symptomatic of the mode of passion. The mode of passion is the impetus for change. Heat makes movement. Any physicist can tell you that. That why molecules are jumping around and bumping into each other, which makes everything in this world happen, is because of heat energy. Because the atoms are heated up, they jump around. And that's how solids turn into gases, and how things change from one thing to another. By the energy, the tapas, creation, the passionate force of creation is called tapas, heat. The Supreme Lord, created by tapas, he glanced at Prakriti, and the heat of that glance agitated her. So that's the function of the mode of passion. When it applies to living beings, you feel a need to change something. And therefore, you get up your passion, you build up your energy, and you expend your energy. Just like you want to quickly get to the other side of the room. The milk is boiling over. So, you know, your brain sends messages to your muscles, and and energy is quickly expended to make you sprint across the room and turn off the stove before it's too late. That's a mode of passion. Make a change. And sometimes make it very quickly. So people who are influenced by the mode of passion want to change something. But it's usually a partial change. It's an incomplete conception of what has to be changed. I don't have enough money. I need to acquire more money. I don't have any friends. I need to make myself attractive, so I will have friends. I'm ignorant, and therefore I can't succeed. I need to get knowledge. I need to make some change. I am powerless. I need to get power and conquer all my enemies. There's different conceptions of what kind of change needs to be made. They're still considered completely materialistic. In that function of the mode of passion, people are moving from one place to the other inside their prison, but they're not getting out of the prison. Like a prisoner in his cell, pacing back and forth in his cell. And maybe out of great frustration, he's hitting his head on the wall too. Or trying to pull down the bars or jump to the ceiling. But it's purposeless movement, ultimately. He can't get out, no matter how hard he pulls on the cell bars, the bars on the window, or how hard he hits his head on the wall. He can't get out of that cell. So people who are simply in the mode of passion, they're moving from one position in the material world to another one by expenditure of passion and energy. But they're not becoming at all free. They want freedom from their poverty, from their weakness, from their helplessness, from their ignorance. And they do get that. What is it? I can remember. Those people who are Krishna says in the Gita, the people who are influenced by the modes, they worship various demigods for fulfillment of their desires. Kshipram and Krikram, Kshipram, quickly they obtain those desires. This is worship of demigods in the mode of passion. But that is very, very imperfect conception of what we might call liberation from bondage. The bondage of poverty, the bondage of political helplessness, the bondage of ignorance. Really, you're just as much bound up. You'll probably end up more bound up after you've made your correction. But a person in the mode of goodness has a higher conception of what his bondage is and how he has to free himself from it. Rajasastu tamasastu rajastasmat sattvam yajnama darshanam. The mode of passion is better than the mode of ignorance, in which one is inert and doesn't, I don't know, how do you do this? And doesn't want to change. And better to want to make a change. But in the mode of passion, you can properly identify what you should be changing into. You know, it's understood in management. I don't know the first thing about management, but I did read a book about curriculum development, how to develop an educational program. The first principle is, don't start until you've decided what you want the goal to be. You want to educate people. What do you want to educate them into? What do you want to turn them into? If you don't know that, then how are you going to properly design a system to train them up? For what? You know, an educational system is a black box. And you have to consider, first of all, what you want to come out of that box. So any system for change, any management system, you have to first of all define what's the goal. So a person in the mode of goodness, he's got some proper idea of the goal of life, Brahma Darshanam. He can see, maybe very distantly, like someone seeing a photograph of an image from a radio telescope that's seeing galaxies zillions of light years away, which he could never see with his bare eye. It's an indirect perception through an instrument, and then another instrument, a camera which took a photograph of the image. Indirect image of an indirect image. But still, he's got some idea. So the person in the mode of goodness has some distant, indirect idea of the absolute truth. Something. It may be a Advaitavada idea. It may be Karmakanda idea of progress, spiritual progress. Even that is something. A person has faith in the Vedas and the system of Vedic sacrifice, understanding that it's worship of the Supreme. And it's a way to link, it's karma yoga, a way to link oneself with the Supreme. Even that conception is an indirect appreciation, perception of the real goal of life. But it's out of focus and it's very distant. If all you think is of Ishvara as the provider of the fruits of sacrifice, then God is not anything different than Santa Claus. He's just, you know, the person who brings you all the things you want. But it's something. It's some conception of the absolute truth. Brahma Darshanam. That is achieved in the mode of goodness. And the person in the mode of goodness, knowing some proper conception of the real goal of life, can make realistic plans and actually make some progress in the right direction, at least. Not just aimlessly moving from one place to the other, as in the mode of passion, or going nowhere, as in the mode of ignorance. He can actually go in the right direction to some extent in the mode of goodness. But out of many karmis and even jnanis, a mumukshu, someone who actually wants to get out of the material existence, that person is extremely rare. Jnanam nikshreya sarthaya. The goal for such a person is to get the knowledge that will achieve to him, for him, the real perfection of life, which is liberation from the cycle of birth and death, and from all ignorance, from all limitations. Vidya granti bedanam. Just to unravel a little bit the threads of your knot and end up with a something just as much entangled. It's like you try to untangle this, you know, this cord is all tangled up. I'm trying to pull it apart, but I just, the more I pull, the more entangled it becomes. But the Mumukshu's goal is to actually cut through and get rid of the bondage altogether, so that the cause of ignorance, the cause of suffering, is no longer there. I can go to a doctor, and he may be very expert. He may cure me of my disease. But he doesn't know how to cure me of my karma. So my karma will just cause another disease, because I have to suffer according to my karma. If I'm not allowed to suffer the way I was supposed to, I'll have to suffer another way. You know, the doctor will lance my boil but then I'll get, you know, hepatitis or something in exchange. My liver was trying to get rid of the poison by through that boil, and I stop that, so the liver will back up and send the poison into my blood system, and I'll get hepatitis instead. Your karma has to be suffered one way or the other, and making piecemeal adjustments will just make the suffering come out on a different side. But liberation means cutting out the source of suffering, the ignorance and the envy and rebellion that are the source of suffering. When they are uprooted, then one's free. So, Vidyagranti Bhedana, one can, this knowledge, not any ordinary knowledge, but knowledge that actually leads to the ultimate perfection of life, will cut through all the knots of the heart. Easily, the pursuit of karmakanda, karmic pursuits, jnanic pursuits, yogic pursuits are very difficult. Businessmen have to work extremely hard. They undergo great austerities. Getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning and commuting 150 miles to go to work. Some people do it. People live in Pennsylvania and commute to New York City. They live in West Virginia and commute to Washington, D.C. You want to experience hell, drive into downtown Washington, D.C. in the morning through the Beltway, they call it. I did it for a few months. It's a very harrowing experience, death-defying. People do that just to make money. And that's just getting to work. What do you think what happens to them when they get there? The jnanis and the yogis, they're even more disciplined. They're going even more trouble than the karmis. But in the actual process, being taught by the actual process of real process for actually achieving real liberation, being taught by Kapiladev, it's very easy. Vidyubir Yoga Margai. I'm going to tell you how you can find an easy way, easy path of yoga, easy journey to other planets. And Prabhupada explains what it involves. Simply understanding who you really are. Of course, we understand, Prabhupada tells elsewhere, that this is a movement for Krishna consciousness, not just self-consciousness. So that's only half the program, is to realize what you are. The other half, the more important half, is to realize what Krishna is, and then put the two together. But even with both halves of it, it's very simple. It's just an adjustment of consciousness. You don't have to commute 150 miles every morning to do that. You don't have to lift a finger. You just have to change your consciousness. Understand who you are, who Krishna is, what your business is with Krishna, and do it. And that's all. Yadahura Varnaye Tate, and I'm going to... Kapiladev tells his mother, I'm going to explain this all to you now. We're not going to hear all of it, not in these classes. We're going to switch over to the 10th canto. But we're just jumping from the Abhideya to the Prayojana. But it's here. You can read it on your own, the rest of Kapiladev's instructions. The easy process of freedom from this bondage, complete freedom from the bondage of material suffering, by going right to the root. Jadayat yashu ya kosham nigirnam analoyata. Bhakti is different than all the other disciplines. The other disciplines, jnana, yoga, karma, they leave the seed of desire still festering in the heart. Just like you may take some treatment for malaria, that may stop the symptoms, but if the germs are still living in your liver, then they'll wake up again when the medicine wears off. and you'll get your malaria again. So you need stronger medicine to kill the germs and clean out your liver. There has to be a double course of medicine according to the allopathic system. Like that, if you take to bhakti yoga, jarayatyashuyakosham, it dissolves your subtle body. And jnana yoga, karma, can't do that. Destroy the subtle body altogether. Then you have no material desires, and there's nothing, no reason to have to come back to the material world again. Prabhupada gave the example in his lecture on that lecture, on that verse of a chickpea, chanaka. What do you call it in Hindi? Chana, kabli chana. You can have a chickpea that's several years old, dried up. Even after being in a dried condition for many years, if you add water to it and stick it in the ground, it may germinate. It may still be alive. They found grains in the tombs of the pharaohs that when watered, they came back to life and germinated, turned into plants, thousands of years old. So it's still alive, but it's dormant. That's what your desires are like when you've practiced ordinary yoga. They're still there. You can be sitting in the Brahmajyoti and wondering, well, it's Friday night, I wonder what's going on down there, and come back again, out of curiosity. But Prabhupada says, you take the chickpea, put it in chonk, and fry it. You fry the chickpea in a frying pan, then it's dead. It cannot germinate after that. And that is the process of bhakti yoga. It fries the seed of desire. So it cannot wake up again. It's dead. That's what Kapila Deva is teaching. Ultimate solution of all our material bondage, all our material problems. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
It seems like the word Nishraya Sayagri resonates with the three verses that we had, Kshemaya.
Yes. Kshema and Nishraya, it must be the same thing. What can you say when you're talking about what's beyond our imagination? You can only use superlatives. So he's trying to be, not to pile on the superlatives too heavy. He's using some eloquent words, but not. Sometimes poets, use strings of superlatives on top of each other. Kapila Deva is not going to that extreme, using a few choice words. Anything else? Hare Krishna. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.